Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to This Week in Health Innovation, the HIMSS Countdown Edition. This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by the Health Innovation Broadcast Consortium. I'm your co-host, Greg Masters, known to some on Twitter as 2HealthGuru and the publisher of ACOWatch.com. I just love that music. I just can't stop sometimes. And I am going to continue telling you that riding shotgun with me today is my co-host, Dr. Pat Salber. Welcome, Pat.
Thanks, Greg. Glad to be here.
Pat is known on Twitter as at Doc Weighs In. She also publishes the popular and go-to TheDoctorWeighsIn.com blog and is also co-founder and CEO of HealthTechHatch.com, an online resource for healthcare entrepreneurs. We're broadcasting our next to last edition of the HIMSS Countdown today with Dr. John Madison, who is the Chief Medical Informatics Officer of Kaiser Permanente Southern California. Welcome, John.
How are you this afternoon?
Oh, I'm glad you made it. We're doing well.
Good.
So now that you're here, I feel better. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Madison. He began his medical career at UC San Diego and Scripps Clinic, where he practiced in many clinical settings, including primary care, critical care, preventive medicine, hyperbaric medicine, trauma, and helicopter medicine. Has held several directorships while at Scripps Clinic, including quality utilization and critical care. He joined Kaiser Permanente in 1989 and was appointed as Assistant Medical Director and Chief Medical Informatic Officer in 1992. John's interest in systems design began as a marine biologist when he created several software applications to model population behavior. He wrote his first electronic health record in 1984, wow, and used fully automated medical records in his practice until the time he began a full-time commitment to healthcare informatics. John has built, designed, or implemented seven different EHR systems, most recently KP Health Connect. His team helped build and deploy the first highly scalable version of this system, which today stands as the first and largest private sector implementation of an EHR in the United States. John was director of the first and largest regional deployment, encompassing 5,000 physicians, 140 clinics, 13 hospitals, and 2.3 million members, but he's quick to identify his many colleagues within KP who have provided the support, resources, and skills necessary for such a monumental achievement. John is also the founder of CDA and CCD International Standards for HIE. Well, I'm impressed. So with that as an introduction, over to you, Pat.
Hi, John. I'm impressed, too. But I want to welcome you to our HIBC TV Health Innovation Half Hour, and today it's the John Madison Half Hour. And as Greg said, we're really glad you could join us today. And there's lots of things that we could talk about. Oh, thanks. There's lots of things we could talk about. I think we could spend a half hour talking about helicopter medicine. But since we're leading up to HIMSS, what I'm hoping is that you can tell us what you're looking forward to most at HIMSS, and what, in your opinion, are the must-see, don't-miss events. And by the way, it's fine to include any talks that you're giving or any panels that you're sitting on.
Sure. Well, thanks. I'll get the plugs out of the way right off the top. So I'm authoring a chapter in a book that is a HIMSS-sponsored book on privacy and healthcare. And so we're doing a roundtable among the various authors of that book on Tuesday at 11 to 12, and their book signing after that. And then I will be staffing the interoperability showcase between the Healthy Ways of which I'm a board member, and the Continuity Care Consortium, of CCC, which will be having their first joint board meeting now that we've announced a strategic collaboration between those two entities. And that board meeting, obviously, is not a public event, but that will be during HIMSS. And so I'd encourage anyone to attend the Interoperability Showcase in general and the newly formed strategic collaboration between the CCC and HealthyWays at any point. I'll be there off and on throughout the conference.
Fantastic. So John, could you tell us more about the Interoperability Showcase? I did have a chance to walk through it last year and was quite impressed. But for our listeners who may not have seen it or maybe their first time at HIMSS, what can they look forward to seeing in
sure.
that?
And if you don't mind, I'll circle back to the first question that I didn't fully answer about, you know, what do I look forward to seeing at HIMSS and what am I really looking for? And so I think, you know, I'm always very keenly tuned to what are the pain points among the physicians, the nurses, the pharmacists, the care delivery team, as well as to patients and members. And so there are a couple things. We're at a really interesting crossroads in health IT, and I think this HIMSS, I'm looking forward to this HIMSS. I've been to many in the past, but I've never looked forward to any prior HIMSS with the amount of anticipation I do this one. And that's because we're at a major crossroads in many respects. We're very close to a significant tipping point in the whole world of health information exchange, and I'll come back to that in your second question in a moment. We're at a tipping point in returning some of the authority and accountability for people, consumers themselves, to take some accountability for their care. And we're also at a major crossroads with health reform, with the meaningful use midstream and lots of controversy in the New York Times and elsewhere about that, and the Accountable Care Act and Accountable Care Organizations and the controversy there. Witnessed the article by Clay Christensen in the New York Times very recently, and a lot of blogosphere response to that. So there's a tremendous number of controversies about what it is we're doing, how we're focusing our energies, and what we're actually getting for it. And finally, the RAND study that was just recently published, revisiting a RAND study done many years ago by different authors, projecting that an adoption of HIT would have already resulted in substantial savings, I think to the tune of $800 billion, but I haven't read it since it came out in early January. And lo and behold, the cost of, I know, I think they projected an $80 billion reduction in costs, and the costs have actually gone up rather than down, and why is that? So there's a lot of serious controversies, and I think it's important to understand, and what I'm looking for at HIMSS is, what are some of the key pain points that are really getting in the way of effective and efficient adoption of health information technology? So on the provider side, I think software usability is really a key issue. So while we have about 17,000 doctors at Kaiser Permanente who would never consider going back to paper, it's hard to find one of them that can't list the top 10 things that irritate them every day about the usability of the system. And that's true everywhere. That's not really vendor specific. That is state of the art. That there's still a lot of opportunity to improve usability of the systems. There's also a need to really advance decision support so that we can take the best evidence-based medicine and very quickly and easily implement it in a way where it occurs at the proper point of workflow for a member of a healthcare delivery team. And so these issues around workflow efficiency and usability are pretty widely documented in many of these articles that have come out in the New York Times as well as in the blogosphere. And I think it's important to recognize that those issues notwithstanding, it's very hard to find a physician, at least at Kaiser Permanente, who would even consider going back to paper because the quality of care that they can deliver and the advances in quality care that we've achieved with health records is so great, it's unmistakable and undeniable And so none of our physicians would want to go back to paper on the one hand, but on the other hand, every one of them has a long list of things they'd like to see improved. So those are some of the things. And then on the consumer side, and I really credit HHS and ONC for really increasingly advocating for the consumer and their role in healthcare. And I think if you read a lot of Clay Christensen's writings on where does true disruptive innovation occur, and if you look at some of the investors who are really, you know, investing heavily in disruptive healthcare technologies, Vinod Khosla would be a good example. They're looking specifically at those things that are consumer-driven and consumer-centric to be really disruptive. So I think so the two things I'm looking for are what are the new systems and applications and services from existing vendors that are going to enhance the usability and the efficiency of the system and allow us to bring much more decision support to the right person at the right time to make the best decision based on the best available evidence. And also I'm looking for solutions that more deeply engage the consumer themselves in being able to participate in their own care. And the reason that that's not just critical from the perspective of disruptive innovation, but the problem that we're having in this country around healthcare costs and healthcare quality are mostly related, not all, but mostly related to when you put aside the, you know, payment for volume versus payment for quality issue, which is huge. But putting that aside and assuming that we'll find our path to get past that, the biggest issues are disorders of lifestyle where people are not really taking full advantage of a wealth of literature about how healthy lifestyles, how we eat, how we sleep, how we work, how we take care of the health of our mind, body, and soul. Those are things that it's very difficult, if not impossible, to really affect for the 15 or 20 minute appointment in the clinic or in a hospital stay. Those are things that really need to be driven much closer to the consumer where they live, work, play, worship, and study and learn. And so the most significant pain points, as I see it, are on the provider side, the usability and efficiency and advanced decision support, and the consumer side, really a credible, accessible, significant role for them to begin managing their own health and their own compliance with whatever disease management programs they have. So those are the kinds of things that I'm really looking for and hope to see this year.
That's a great overview, John. And if it's okay, I have a few follow-up questions because I think you have really highlighted two of the most important issues that I agree with you that we have with respect to Health IQ. And I wanted to start with the usability because you mentioned that it would be, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find anyone who'd want to go back to paper. Just to let you know, I think we might have found one in an interview that we had with Dr. Rob Lambert earlier this week. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Rob and his writing, but he was an evangelist, an EHR evangelist, who recently wrote a blog on his site that was posted, I believe, on the healthcare blog called Death of an Evangelist. And what he talked to us about was really all these issues related to usability, and in particular, how he felt like the existing EHR solutions were built to do something different from what he wanted to do in terms of patient care, that they were built to build, they were built, you know, for certain kinds of workflow issues, but that didn't get at the nugget that he wanted, which was really on facilitating and enhancing physician-patient communication. I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, I think that there's a great deal of truth in what he articulated, in that when you take a system that's primarily built for billing purposes, anything other than clinical care, that tail can wag the dog in really unfortunate ways and really obstruct workflow. And so I honestly don't know which vendor solution he's using, and it's not relevant. But what I will add, though, is that in the first year or two of our deployments of Health Connect at Kaiser Permanente, we had lots of physicians who wanted to go back to paper, who kicked and screamed and explained how this was ruining their life and really much interfering with their ability to provide quality care. And so what we knew going into that, since this is the seventh time I've implemented a health record, I'd been through that cycle before, and I'd been to our board of directors repeatedly and said, you know, the first year is going to be really rough. That's the way it is. But we have a plan to focus on optimizing the workflows and having the and configuring and adapting and changing the system in ways that would support more efficient care, rather than forcing the doctors to adapt to the system as it was. And I think the ability to optimize, and it's different for every specialty. It's different in the inpatient and the outpatient setting. There is, I mean, it's been said that you know, really implementing an electronic health record across an integrated delivery system is like doing a core biopsy through the entire enterprise, because you really have to understand nitty-gritty details of workflows that are highly variable, most of which is functional variation, some of which is just random noise, and we really seek to eliminate variations that cannot be justified based on the evidence. But just like we do evidence-based medicine, we've done a lot of evidence-based optimization of workflows and system configuration. And if I pity the poor physician who works in a system that came up with just enough money to get their health record implemented and to have a shot at getting some meaningful use money, but didn't have anything left over for the ongoing training and support and optimization and adaptation of the system to better serve the clinician. So while every physician at Kaiser Permanente could give you their top 10 list of what needed to be changed and improved, you not only couldn't find someone who would be willing to go back to paper, but you wouldn't be able to find someone who would say that we haven't made substantial improvements in the usability of the system for them since we've been in a continuous optimization state. So we have an entire optimization team, which goes specialty by specialty, and first of all evaluates how much functionality is this individual using, because electronic health records are known as content-rich applications, and they are the extreme example. So you can't just plug it in and get it rocking and rolling. You really have to invest some time in the content so that it supports your style of practice, it supports your specialty, it supports your patient population, and that it's constantly updated to maintain the best practices and the best evidence-based support. So I would have to say that there are a lot of physicians who would resonate with Rob Lambert's blog, but I think that there's a very close dependence on just how much time and effort and money, because this doesn't come free, has been spent to work with the system, to adapt it more to the workflow, to work with the physician and the care team, and understand what are the pain points that need to be addressed. So we have made literally tens of thousands of changes, and we've done millions of hours of support and optimization and retraining. Because a lot of physicians, even after going through extensive training over a period of time, really hadn't mastered even the basics of how to use the system effectively. So we actually had a course that we started for folks. We identified the folks who were struggling the most, and we went back to those folks and put them through, took them out of clinic, and as an integrated delivery system, we can do this, and we did it, and basically gave them some basic skills that they had missed in the first round. And we literally had physicians who at the end of the course were so grateful, they were crying with gratitude, because they said, you know, I was about to give up my career in medicine, and you have salvaged my career, and I love what I do for the first time in a year. And so it isn't like you can just flip a switch, turn this thing on, go collect your meaningful use money. And I think that is at the core of a lot of the controversy right now, is was the health record implemented with eyes wide open about the fact that ongoing support and adaptation and optimization is critical, or was it implemented as just a quick way to get a quick buck out of meaningful use without the ongoing support? And in the case of the latter, there are a lot of docs suffering, and I think all of them will probably resonate with Rob's blog.
Thanks, John. And, you know, it's really interesting. So I'm a former Kaiser Permanente physician and a current Kaiser Permanente patient, and I love Health Connect, and I love the ability to email with my physician and the fact that we do most of our visits standing in front of the computer. This really fits the way I like to receive care. And for my internist, she's completely comfortable. She obviously was one of the success stories in terms of learning how to use the system. But Kaiser has so many resources that you just described to help docs kind of overcome the problems. Maybe this isn't a fair question because you are a Permanente physician, but any thoughts on how docs out there in smaller practices without that kind of wraparound resource can get on the other side of the hurdles that they seem to be facing with the implementation of electronic health records?
Well, you know, and it's a great question, and I think that there are really three categories of folks out there who have done it. Those that have found their own way to optimize and been really, really creative. Those who have gotten some support from their peers and have sort of muddled through, and those who are just dying on the vine. And so really the opportunity is within every small group is to find someone who's using the same system, and if there's no one in your group, find out from the vendor from another group who has found the pathway in a similar practice environment, similar workflows, who has actually climbed that hill and gotten to the other side, and then pay them to come help show the path. It is not intuitively obvious. Doctors are not trained to do the wishbone analysis of workflow and Six Sigma and operational optimization. That's not what you get in medical school. So to some extent, And it's very difficult for someone who does it, who has never practiced medicine, to understand the complexity of these workflows and where the real pain points are. So what I would suggest is that finding someone in a similar specialty, same specialty, similar workflow, hopefully within your own group, but if not in an external group, that uses the same application, because a lot of these issues don't are unique to the specific application you're using. But find those individuals and pay them to come give some in-services on where some of the biggest bang for the bucks are in optimization, because this is an intensely local issue, and that's the problem. It comes back to the notion of an EHR being a core biopsy through the whole organization, because if you saw one workflow in one specialty, you've seen one workflow in one specialty, and even in the same specialty in different medical centers, found different yet functional workflows based upon how those clinicians had evolved their work over many, many years. And so there isn't a single right universal answer that generalizes easily. You have to study each situation and make sure that the solution you provide is very custom tailored to that specialty in that local environment. And this applies to nurses, it applies to pharmacists, it applies to everyone in the healthcare team. Workflow variation in healthcare is extraordinary, and it's one of the big urban legends around health IT that, you know, healthcare and doctors are resistant to technology. That couldn't be further from the truth. If you look, and often we're compared to banking, and people say, well, why can't you do it banking? I mean, they standardize things. We got a credit card, and we have, you know, it's all taken care of. Well, you have in banking, you have dollars and cents, debits and credits, and seconds and minutes. And those are your six data types. Now, there's algorithms based on those, but those are your six data types. In healthcare, we have tens of thousands of critical, unique concepts and data types that need to be managed. And we have thousands of viable variations and valid variations in workflow. And to to think that we could simply knock off a universal solution like it was done in banking or finance seriously underestimates the richness of what's involved in the comprehensive care of human beings. We're not taking care of dollars and cents and debits and credits and minutes and seconds. We're taking care of human beings, mind, body, and soul, and it's a very different thing. So to answer your question, find someone with the same application, the same specialty anywhere who has figured out how to do it, and have them come show you.
Yeah, more good advice. Thanks, John. And we could spend more time on this because, you know, it's really a daunting task if you're in a smaller practice. But I wanted to spend our remaining minutes talking about the other stakeholder, the person for whom we're all doing this work, and that's the consumer or the patient. And to ask you a little bit about how you see the evolution of HIT to become more consumer-friendly. And I'm going to, again, talk about something that Dr. Lambert brought up with us, which I thought was a fantastic idea. I recently went to a Silicon Valley Health 2.0 and had a young entrepreneur who stood up and was showing us his PHR that he'd developed on a cell phone and how it was in the cloud, but you had to do all this data entry, and he's going on, and finally somebody in the audience raised their hand, and I thought asked the question of the night, which was, so how are you going to make people use this? And I think it's a fundamental problem that we have with a lot of the health IT that we've developed, that it doesn't fit into people's lives, it doesn't make their lives easier. And Dr. Lambert came up with an idea that I thought was really interesting. I'm going to throw it out for you to comment on. He was talking about children and their developmental milestones and asking the question, so instead of me taking this history and documenting it in the EHR, what if mom just sent me the video that she took on her cell phone of Johnny when he took his first step? And could we really end up developing something that would be fun, not data entry, but fun and satisfying for consumers to help build a common medical record?
You know, I think that's an interesting proposal. I think it solves a portion of the problem. But, you know, the virtue of a medical record is to have a single comprehensive set of information that helps inform the care of today and the care of tomorrow. And if you look at how busy providers are already and, frankly, just overwhelmed with information, having a series of videos of children would be a very rich source of information, but might not be an efficient use of the provider's time. So while it might be easier for mom to take a 3-minute video and send one in twice a month, by the end of the year, you know, you've got over an hour of video on the chart, and that may not necessarily be all that usable. So it's kind of a cute notion, but I have a very different view of personal health records from that. And that is, I agree. When I first heard about that Google was starting Google Health and that it was going to be basically a repository that patients can enter their information into, you know, I told my colleagues, you know, that's dead on arrival. Who's going to want to enter all that information? So I think that's fundamentally a flawed model, and I was not at all surprised when Google Health failed. However, I'm a big believer in personal health records. We have nearly 70% of our members today who are eligible, actively using, on average, 19 touches per year, their personal health record on our system. For those patients who are not fortunate enough to be a member of an integrated delivery system that offers these kind of services, I think having their own personal health record may be a very significant solution. And the blue button and the iBlue button and some of the work that vendors like Humetrics are doing right now is really interesting because it overcomes much of the problem that was characterized by the questioner at Health 2.0. And that is, I don't want to sit there and put all that data in, but what if I can get a copy, you know, from my primary care doc in Timbuktu, North Dakota, and just have that on my smartphones without having to enter anything, but just to get what is available to me on that and be able to use it when I travel or within the country, overseas or whatever. So I think the solution is not so much to use video as an alternative to other forms of data. I think the issue is more to capture the stuff that is already captured for other purposes. And I will add that there's a big role for remote sensing in this context is, you know, you can capture a lot of data fairly passively without a lot of effort of the consumer and use that information, whether it's for digital blood sugars or blood pressures or weights or whatever. And those things, there are tons of products, and they will be at HIMSS, that allow for the reuse of those same data that are captured for other purposes already without any additional effort. So I would say, you know, there are certain things where a video segment would be better than anything. I mean, neurologic disorders or developmental milestones, I think, are great examples. So I think the response and the idea is valid, but it's such a small fraction of what needs to be in a personal health record. The bigger answer, in my view, is both capturing what's already captured and make it really easy for individual consumers and patients to enter their own data into the system as an adjunct, not as the primary source, but as an adjunct to data that's passively acquired from sensing devices or data that's already available in an electronic health record. So, yes, the video would be good for specific circumstances of developmental milestones, which are essentially neurologic disorders, and that sort of thing. But that's a relatively small fraction of the whole of healthcare delivery.
Thanks, John. That's great. Well, we're out of time. And again, Greg and I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to share what you see as the highlights of HIMSS and to have a very rich conversation about health IT. So I look forward to seeing you at HIMSS, and I look forward to our next segment, which will be another member of Kaiser Permanente, Phil Fasano, who will be joining us tomorrow at This Week in Health Innovations. Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Under the old apple tree, the apples looked so good to me, I ate up the whole darn tree. Come see about me, come see about me, come see about me, I ate up the apple tree. Now Adam took a bite out of the apples one day, and the juice came running out. That's when you and I and everybody found out what love was all about. Come see about me. Come see about me. Come see about me. I ate up the apple tree.
Hey, John.
under the old apple tree. The apples looked so good to me, I ate up the whole darn tree. Come see about me. Come see about me. Come see about me. I ate up the apple tree. Now Adam took a bite out of the apple one day, and the juice came running out. That's when you and I and everybody found out what love was all about. Come see about me. Come see about me.